and meaning to life. They make you feel like you're taking control of your life rather than letting life control you. That you're planning out your life together and not just wishing you were living someone else's. You can do this. Talk about money even when it's hard. Push through the uncomfortable conversations and get to the other side. My hope is that you and your spouse can get on the same page with your money and start to find a new level of unity in your marriage that you will not be able to experience any other way. When you're single. If you're single, there's a modified way to do this. Same plan, different players. Find someone in your life who you can talk to about money. It's just as crucial for you to get caring, outside input on your budget as it is for someone who's married. This person should be someone you trust because you'll probably share some numbers you want to keep confidential. And obviously, you want to find someone who is good with money. This isn't really the place for a designer-loving, shopping-all-the-time girlfriend. You should be comfortable with sharing your budget with this person because they will help keep you accountable. Ask them to text you a few times a month to see how you're doing with your money. It would be wise to choose someone who you can call before making a huge purchase, just to help you keep things in perspective. And make sure this person can celebrate the big wins in your life, like getting a raise or eliminating debt. This person needs to love you enough not to be afraid to hurt your feelings. He or she needs to be able to say things like, "Cashing out your IRA to buy a boat is a stupid idea," or "New bedroom furniture is not an emergency." You want someone who will speak money truth and wisdom into your purchases and decisions with money. This person also needs to value what you value. If they think racking up credit card debt in order to raise your credit score is a good idea, then they may not understand your commitment to debt-free living. If you make it a priority to save for retirement, but this person keeps telling you, "Go live your life. Don't worry about the future," then find someone else. When you're single, it's easy to do your own thing when it comes to your money. You don't have to ask about the things you want to buy. Sitting at home by yourself is not as fun as going out with friends, so plan for those nights out. It may be easy for you to overspend simply because your money decisions aren't impacting anyone else. There's nothing inherently wrong with these things. Just make sure you budget for your lifestyle and that you're spending your money wisely. If you're out of debt and saving for the future, then make your eating out category in your budget larger if you want. Just be intentional about the changes you make. When you're dating. When you're out on the first date, you probably shouldn't ask about the other person's income, car payments, or amount of debt he or she has racked up. I'm no dating expert, but if you do, you probably won't get asked out on a second date, and you might come across as crazy. But if the relationship starts to get serious, it's important to start talking about money. Money is a taboo subject for many people. The topic can be embarrassing, and it's definitely personal. Nevertheless, money-related issues need to be talked about extensively before marriage. If bee stings were the number one killer in your city, what would you do? You would read up on where bees live, what makes them sting, and what types of clothes you need to wear to protect yourself. If this were true, everyone would be walking around in bee protective suits, and that would be considered normal. You would talk about bees to your friends, families, and neighbors. There would be meetings about how to defend yourself against a bee sting. If the worst case scenario happened and you actually got stung, there would be a plan in place to make sure you survived. If you knew that money issues were one of the top killers of marriages, what would you do? You'd talk about it all the time, and then you'd make a plan. When you're in a dating relationship that might lead to a long-term commitment, initiate the conversation. How the other person responds will help you make a wise decision about whether or not you'll move forward with the relationship. Eventually, you will want to share information with each other, like how much you make, the amount of debt you would bring to the table, your goals for your money, and your top financial priorities. If you ultimately can't trust your boyfriend or girlfriend with these conversations, then I've got bad news. Either you're not ready to get married, or you haven't found the right person yet. That may be hard to hear, but it's the truth. Kids and parents. Many parents are hesitant to talk with their kids about money because they feel guilt or shame from their own past mistakes. If you're a parent, talk to your kids about money, even when it's hard. Teach them how money works. This is not the school's job, a counselor's job, or anyone else's job. It's your job. One of my friends has an 8-year-old son who has more than $1,000 in his own checking account. It started as a challenge from my friend's husband to their son, who was 5 at the time. They opened up his own savings account and told him they would match every deposit until he reached a balance of $1,000. In just 3 years, their son met his goal and has more money in his savings account than many adults. He is learning at an early age the power and excitement of watching his money grow over time. That doesn't happen by accident. This experience will shape his view and use of money for the rest of his life. So how exactly do you talk to your kids about money? It's pretty simple. The basics. Start with the basics. Teach them to work, give, save, and spend. Growing up, my parents never gave us an allowance. We were always on commission. You work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. This taught me from a young age that money comes from work, not from mom and dad's wallets. Attach a specific amount of money to certain chores your kids do around the house and let them earn their own money. Of course, every child needs to do some chores simply because they're part of a family. So I'm not suggesting paying them for everything they do around the house. But I encourage parents to attach a commission to some of those chores. With commissions, kids have to work for every dollar. That changes how they handle the money you pay them. When your children earn their money, they will give it differently, save it differently, and spend it differently because they feel more of an emotional connection to it. Teach them to spend, save, and give wisely. Talk them through purchases. Explain the difference between quality and quantity. Your influence on the next generation begins at home. Be the bridge your kids need to a better, brighter future where they can win with money even earlier in life than you did. Teaching your children about money is most effective when you give them opportunities to work, give, save, and spend. It gives them great practice before they enter the outside world. There also needs to be some conversations around money. As the parent, one of your jobs is to help shape your kids' expectations about the future. Help them visualize what it will look and feel like to save up and pay cash for a big purchase like their first car. Another conversation you can have with your kids is to reveal your past money mistakes. It's good for them to hear things you wish you had done differently. Don't be ashamed of your past. See it as a learning experience and a way to show them how to avoid the same pain you experienced. A good rule of thumb is to share, but don't scare. Don't try to explain the concept of foreclosure to your 6-year-old. This will only scare them, and they may end up waking you up later that night because they had a nightmare of a banker trying to kick them out of their own house. Instead, make these conversations age-appropriate. Sharing your stories with them will go further than you realize. My parents have always been open with their story of bankruptcy and debt. Because of that, I learned to stay away from the life-restricting obligation of debt. I'm thankful they were honest with us and didn't try to sweep things under the rug and act like everything was perfect. This was a quick flyover of how to help your children understand how money works. But if you're looking for more in-depth resource on this topic, my dad and I wrote a book together called Smart Money, Smart Kids that hits every aspect of raising money-smart children. If you have kids and want to set them up to win with money, you should check it out. Adult kids, talk to your parents. Grown kids need to talk to their parents about money too. This can be difficult, but it still needs to be done in certain situations. There is a whole generation of older parents who don't have the means for retirement, don't have a plan in place for when they pass, and don't know how they're going to handle many of the golden years decisions. I've heard too many tragic stories about fathers who passed away without life insurance, mothers who don't have long-term care insurance, and parents who died without wills. None of these people saw these tragedies coming. People want to think their family members have more time, so they avoid these difficult conversations. Don't let this happen to you. Initiate these conversations before the need arises. As a grown child, you need to talk to your parents about their future financial plans. Be sure they have a will in place. Get the facts around their insurance situation and review any other related details while there is time for a course correction if needed. You don't have to know all the details within each of those categories. You just want to be sure you have a plan in place. Whatever they haven't addressed may eventually become your responsibility. So go ahead and ask about these things as soon as possible. These can be awkward conversations, but they will help you eliminate a great deal of stress when, not if, your family member dies. And it will give you the time and space to grieve. You're trying to take charge of your money in order to win in the long term. You want your parents in that place too. Again, you don't have to know all the information that's in their will if they aren't comfortable sharing those details. However, it's wise to get a plan in place to ensure that their house is in order when the time comes. Define the relationship. There's a special conversation, commonly known as the DTR, that marks a turning point in a dating relationship. DTR stands for Define the Relationship. The conversation signals a change in commitment or focus when the relationship starts to get serious. This talk is usually awkward and sometimes doesn't turn out exactly how you expect, but it's a key milestone in a growing relationship. Talking about money can also be one of those DTR moments in a relationship. Your willingness to approach the subject with honesty and vulnerability with your spouse or fiancé, parents, boyfriend or girlfriend, and children is critical to winning with money. You'll never know if you're living life in alignment with your core values, dreams, and benefits until you have honest conversations around those things. Winston and I don't talk about money because we have to, but because we want to. The conversation always starts with dollars and cents, but ends with dreams, possibilities, and opportunities. A big part of marriage is creating a life you love together. Money is simply a tool to help you realize those dreams. Granted, money isn't always easy to talk about, but if you're willing to endure the occasional discomfort and awkwardness those conversations bring, you'll find the freedom to love each other more deeply and with greater satisfaction than you ever thought possible. Why? Because you'll be on the same page. That is what will pull you through the darkest days and the brightest moments of your life. Habit 5, Save Like You Mean It. Chapter 10, Saving for Life. Mom is going to be so proud of me. That's what I was thinking as I walked into the post office. Since I was young, she has drilled into my head the practice of sending handwritten thank you notes whenever you receive a gift. The fact that I was mailing out all of my thank you notes for my wedding gifts just 30 days after our wedding was a huge deal for me. One thing Winston and I didn't cut back on when it came to our wedding was the guest list. So, consequently, we had hundreds of thank you notes to write, seal, stamp, and mail. When I finished the last one, I couldn't wait to mail them and check this monumental project off my list. I proudly carried those thank you notes in a big box and handed them over to the nice gentleman behind the counter at the post office. I felt like I could conquer the world as I walked out of there that day. I put my car in drive and started to slowly pull forward out of my parking space when I heard the sound of metal. My heart sank as I thought, wait, what was that? I wasn't supposed to be hearing scraping and crunching. I wondered where it was coming from. I stopped and looked in the direction of the sound, where an elderly man stood with a look of horror on his face. His expression told me everything I needed to know. I had hit his car. Whatever feeling of accomplishment I had about the thank you notes vanished as I got out and walked around my car to see what I had done. I was mortified and apologized immediately. This wasn't just a dent in his door. The door was bending in the opposite direction. The good news was that no one got hurt and we had insurance. The bad news was that our deductible was $1,000, and that was a lot of money for us. At the time, we were young newlyweds who had only been married for 30 days. If we hadn't had some money saved for moments just like this, a bad situation could have quickly become much, much worse. Life is full of surprises. You never know when life is going to happen to you. The washer will go out, the hot water heater will break, or the unexpected medical bill will come. Choosing to save for these moments won't prevent them from happening, but the habit will give you confidence and options when they do. Next month never comes. Saving is something we all know we should do, like going to the dentist every 6 months, visiting the doctor annually, exercising, and eating right. But like those things, we sometimes fudge when it comes to actually doing them. It's easy to talk ourselves into saving next month. The only problem is that next month never comes. It just keeps getting pushed out another month. Saving, even a small amount, will give you peace of mind. The habit will give you a sense that you're doing small things now that will give you big benefits when you need to legitimately dig into it. The principled practice of taking money from your paycheck and putting it away for the future is sometimes hard, but you'll be surprised how quickly your savings can grow if you're consistent. Like the Bible says, wealth gained hastily will dwindle, but whoever gains little by little will increase it. Proverbs 13:11. Today versus tomorrow. There are so many big things pulling us in the present. The practice of saving for the future can seem impossible and, frankly, not much fun. For me, spending money feels far more exciting. When you buy things you want and need today, you get that feeling of instant gratification. There's no waiting. However, having nothing in savings adds to the stress level in the middle of a crisis. You will be forced to use debt to bridge the gap, and that debt will only compound your problem. Using debt for a car repair leaves you with a car problem and a money problem. The same is true for any unexpected event when we have no financial margin. When we don't have any money saved, we are cautiously looking around each corner, expecting something to jump out and ruin our day. That's a miserable way to live. When it comes to saving money, there are many things we could talk about. For now, let's focus on two important areas: building an emergency fund and preparing for stage of life events. The emergency fund. You can't schedule emergencies, but you can count on the fact that you will have them. You don't know when they're coming, you just know they will, someday. That's why it's important to prepare now so you'll be ready. The emergency fund is a must in life. This is your safety net or your cushion between you and the inevitable. The fund is there to catch you and make the fall a little less painful. Begin with a $1,000 emergency fund. As fast as you can, get that little starter emergency fund in place. Saving $1,000 can feel impossible if you're starting with nothing. However, most people can find money when they want to buy or do something that's important to them. If you're already strapped for cash, consider selling some stuff online, skipping restaurants for a month or two, or cutting out some extra entertainment like concerts, movies, and events. You may even take on a part-time job if necessary to get you to the $1,000 mark. Do whatever you have to do to get to this point as quickly as possible. Chances are, $1,000 is enough to keep you from turning into debt when unexpected things happen. Sure, there are emergencies that will require more than that, but this will give you a great start. Besides, having only $1,000 in the bank for emergencies isn't the long-term plan. Once you're debt-free, except for your mortgage, bump your starter emergency fund up to 3 to 6 months' worth of expenses. That'll be your fully funded emergency fund. Can you imagine having no debt payments and 6 months' worth of expenses saved in the bank? Seriously, stop and think about what life would feel like at that point. And the great thing is, you can do it. I hear stories every day from people just like you who have reached this goal. This financial goal is a life changer, and I promise you can get there. Reasons why. The emergency fund will help you with all the difficult and unexpected things that happen in life. The money is there to help you navigate a job loss, replace your heating and air unit, fix your car, and cover unexpected doctor bills. This last one is serious. Medical debt is constantly one of the leading causes of bankruptcy in America today. Having any cash on hand to help with those expenses is important, even if what you have saved only covers deductibles and copays. I have counseled people who were able to overcome impossible odds because those funds were there. And it's not just about the money sitting in the bank. It's about the power the emergency fund gives you in a crisis. It enables you to act, or at least react, without going into a panic or falling back into debt. When you have cash saved and the unexpected happens, you have the power to focus on what's really important, a sick child or a tree branch sticking through your roof, instead of focusing on money. Keep it separate. Your emergency fund needs to be in a separate account from your regularly budgeted spending money. If it just sits in your checking account, it will be difficult to know if you're unintentionally using emergency dollars for everyday purchases. But while it is in a separate account, it still needs to be in a place where you can get to it when you need it, anytime, any day. That's why a basic savings account or money market account with online, ATM, or debit card access is the best plan. That way you can act immediately, whether or not the bank's open at that time. You or your spouse may struggle with the idea of putting $10,000 or so into a basic savings account or money market account that doesn't earn much interest. I get that, but you need to think of the emergency fund as insurance, not an investment. And insurance costs you money, right? Don't get all fancy with this money trying to find the best rate of return. That's not why it's there. It's tucked away for emergencies. It won't earn much, but when you need it, you'll be glad you have it. I can't begin to tell you the peace that I felt once we fully funded our emergency fund. Now, when I look online at our accounts, I don't even include the emergency fund amount when I add up what we have in savings. I emotionally don't want to think about it because I never want to be tempted to spend it. I want to avoid using that money so much, in fact, that I want to have an emergency fund for our emergency fund. Stage of life events. Emergencies aren't the only thing you want to plan for. There are also expected stage of life events. The sooner you begin putting money away for these things, the more prepared you'll be when the time comes to pay for them. So what are we talking about here? Think of the big purchases or occasions in the future that will cost you a lot of money. I'm talking about buying a car, getting married, taking a big anniversary vacation, or sending your kids to college. These things aren't emergencies, but they can be incredibly expensive. With the emergency fund, you know you'll need money for something at some time. You just don't know what or when. With stage of life events, you pretty much know what's coming, when it's coming, and how much it'll cost. That means there's no excuse for not being prepared. Let's talk about a few of the big ones that trip up a lot of people. Saving for a car. Most people want a great vehicle. I get it. You don't want to drive around in something you aren't proud of or that feels like it's going to break down every time you drive it. Neither do I. We all want to drive a car we love and feel as safe and reliable. So with that in mind, we just need a plan to get us there. Rule number one, we talked about this in chapter 4, is to never even consider getting a car loan. Making payments on a car is a fast track to financial mediocrity. A car goes down in value the second you drive it off the lot, but your payments are based on what it's worth while it was sitting in the showroom with 5 miles on the odometer. That means a few years later, you're still paying the brand new car price even though the vehicle is worth half or less of that. Paying interest on something that is worth less and less every month is a terrible idea, no matter how much money you have. I have talked to so many people over the years who shrug this off and say, "Oh, come on, Rachel. I'm always going to have a car payment, so I might as well have a nice car, right?" Wrong. Few things will keep you as broke over the course of your life as surrendering to the eternal car payment. The routine of making car payments every single month of your entire adult life is one of the worst financial habits I can think of, and one of the first bad habits you need to break. Most people have been doing this for so long that they can't even imagine a life without car payments. But if you want to live the life you've always dreamed of living, you've got to break the car payment habit and replace it with a habit of saving. One of my favorite Saturday Night Live skits shows a financial counselor trying to convince Steve Martin to save up and pay for things using cash instead of debt. My favorite line in the routine is when Steve Martin looks up at the guy with a confused look on his face and asks, "But where do you get this saved money?" It's hilarious and pokes fun at our debt-obsessed culture. But there's a lot of hidden truth in the humor. "Where do I get this saved money?" is a question a lot of people are asking these days. So let's look at how you can do this for your next car purchase. Let's say you're driving a car that's worth about $8,000 today, and you will probably replace that car this time next year. For the next 12 months, try to save $500 every month. That means you will have $6,000 a year from now. At that point, you could possibly sell your car for around $7,000. Then you have cash to go buy a great $13,000 car. Keep following the same formula over and over for the rest of your life. You could keep doing this and upgrade your car as often as you wanted to, and you'd still never have a car payment again. I can hear it now. "Yeah, Rachel, that sounds great. If I had an extra $500 a month laying around." The thing is, though, everyday people commit to spending $500 a month on their cars. Believe it or not, the average car payment in America today is nearly $500. Why is it that nobody thinks that they can save $500 a month, but everybody thinks they can afford a $500 payment each month? It's because we bought into the lie that they'll always have a car payment. If you can make that mental shift, if you can break the habit of car payments, you can free up literally millions of dollars in potential retirement income. This is a big, big deal. If you have a car payment currently, then you either need to pay it off with the debt snowball or sell it. If you owe more on it than it's worth, you could sell it and take out a small loan for the difference. At that point, you will just buy a cheap, reliable car with cash and start the savings plan from there. That's assuming you don't have any other debts, of course. If you have more debts than just your car, then you need to drive your new used car for a while you clean up your debt. Then, once you're debt-free with a fully funded emergency fund, you can start saving up for a newer car. This may mean that you'll have to drive the older $1,000 car around for a while. I know that sounds terrible, but it's just temporary. If driving a 20-year-old Camry for a year or so now will enable you to drive whatever you want in the near future, it's worth it. Make saving for a car a new habit, even if you don't need a new car today. We all know we will need to replace our cars at some point. Depending on how much you drive, you may replace your cars more frequently than other people. Add a new line item in your budget so you can start saving money in a car fund. Saving for retirement. One of the biggest stage of life events is retirement. It's something that many people have a hard time wrapping their minds around simply because it's so far in the future, especially for young adults or families with little kids running around. However, the data on retirement savings is sobering. Studies show that 1/3 of people in their 30s and 40s have nothing saved for retirement, and almost 7 out of 10 people in their 20s haven't saved a dime yet. That's crazy. Investing in those early years is your best chance to build lasting wealth over the course of your life. but 70% of people in their 20s don't think it's a big deal. And a third of the people hitting midlife haven't even started yet. No, no, no. I don't care how old you are. You can make retirement savings a priority and a habit, even if it doesn't feel urgent today. If you're overwhelmed by the thought of saving for retirement, know that you're not alone. I'll let you in on a secret that's not so secret. Saving for retirement is possible. Your ability to feel confident about your retirement years depends upon your willingness to develop a new money habit of saving like you mean it. If you need help with this, I recommend you check out my favorite book on retirement planning, Retire Inspired, by my friend Chris Hogan. Saying no today is hard. The discipline of saying no to something in the present so you can focus on something 30 or 40 years in the future won't seem fun. And I'm right there with you. I'm a spender, remember? Setting that money aside for the future is tough. But guess what? I know that the older, retirement-aged version of myself will be a spender too. And the only money future Rachel will have to spend is the money I send her way today. And if I can do it right, future Rachel will have more to spend than current Rachel would know what to do with. But that will only happen if I commit to a lifelong habit of saving. K.T. Barnum once said, "You will find there is more satisfaction in rational saving than in irrational spending." The only problem is you may not feel that satisfaction in the moment. I had a pretty good reminder of this when I was pregnant. I had been working like crazy at the time, and my commission check showed it. It was a great feeling, but I was absolutely exhausted. During that week's regular budget conversation, I told Winston the amount I was expecting for that check, and I admitted that I was already dreaming of what we'd be able to get for the nursery with that month's extra income. But then reality sank in. I remembered that a few months earlier, during another conversation, Winston and I had agreed on a big money goal for the year. We both wanted to focus on our retirement savings that year, so we decided to put any extra money we got throughout the year would go straight into our retirement accounts until we maxed them out for the year. Shortly after we made that decision together, Winston had a great month at work and was expecting a pretty nice paycheck. He mentioned wanting to go and buy some new hunting gear, but we talked about it, and I reminded him about our retirement goal for the year. He agreed, and that extra money went into our retirement instead of Bass Pro Shop. He was disappointed, but it was a decision we had made together months earlier, so we were just sticking to the plan. But now, with my big commission check on the way, the tables had turned. When I brought up the extra nursery stuff I wanted, it was his turn to remind me of our retirement goal. Can you just imagine having this conversation with an emotional pregnant woman? Yeah, not fun. Poor guy. I have to admit, I was really disappointed. Okay, fine. I was mad. In the moment, it seemed so annoying to put money away that I wouldn't see for decades. I mean, the precious baby growing inside me deserved a beautiful brass crib, not the cheap wooden one we had just bought. Oh, the hormones were taking over. However, when I came back to reality, I really couldn't argue. He wasn't being cheap or mean. He was just reminding me of our shared goals. It was a decision we had made together to focus on long-term savings, and we were holding each other accountable. That's how marriage works. Now, could I have spent some of that paycheck on the nursery? Sure. We could have talked about it and maybe carved out a little chunk of that paycheck for extra nursery stuff. But here's the thing. We didn't need to. We had already budgeted what we were going to spend on the nursery, and I didn't need to add any more money to the budget. The fact I was getting a little extra money on one paycheck didn't mean our nursery or our retirement plans had to change. It's not that I was saying no to ever spending money on our new baby, or that Winston could never buy new hunting stuff again. It was just that any extra money that year was allocated to something we had already agreed on. Having the discipline to say no to something in the present so we can focus on our retirement was hard. It was a huge reality check for me, in fact. But now, looking back at that moment, I know we made the right decision. After living with a baby for a while now, I know the nursery really isn't that important as long as there's a crib and a comfy chair. Our retirement accounts, though, are looking pretty solid. No hunting gear or nursery decor can make up for the extra tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars we'll enjoy at retirement because of those two tough, in-the-moment decisions in our 20s. When are you ready to save for retirement? Retirement planning has to be a priority for you, regardless of your age, but you need to make sure you're ready to start saving for retirement before you dive in. Retirement savings should enter your financial plan once you're debt-free except for the house, and you have a fully funded emergency fund of 3 to 6 months' worth of expenses in the bank. Once you get there, you are ready to start climbing the retirement mountain. I often get pushback on this point from people, usually serious planners and savers, who want to prioritize retirement above anything else in their budget. If you were up to your neck in debt and had no savings, but you had a lot of money tucked away in your 401k, what do you think will happen in an emergency? You'll either go deeper in debt, bad plan, or you'll go to the one place you actually do have money, your 401k. That's a bad plan too. Borrowing against your 401k robs you of that money's earning power and basically puts you in debt to yourself. And outright withdrawing funds from your 401k early will cost you about 40% of your money in taxes and penalties. Make sure you have a strong financial foundation by being debt-free with a fully funded emergency fund before you start saving for retirement. When you're ready to start saving for retirement, you should put 15% of your income into tax-favored retirement plans. Tax-favored simply means you're taking advantage of some great investing vehicles that provide some protection against taxes eating up all of your savings when you hit retirement. Staying with 15% for a while is a great balance. It still leaves you enough income to enjoy life and work on paying off your house early. But it's also a significant enough contribution every month that your retirement accounts will start growing quickly. There are a million rules and details when it comes to investing, so you always want to work with an investment professional you trust. Make sure it's someone who has the heart of a teacher. This person should explain to you, in layman's terms, how these investments work. If you don't understand how something works, don't invest your money in it. If your financial pro gets impatient with you or starts talking down to you, and find someone who will respectfully walk you through the steps. Don't blindly take someone else's word on what you should or shouldn't do with your money. I know this was all a pretty light touch on a huge, complicated world of investing. For a full understanding of the ins and outs of retirement planning, again, you should pick up a copy of Retire Inspired by Chris Hogan. It's pretty much the only retirement book I've seen that's easy to understand and actually fun to read. Saving for college. If you have kids, the next step after building momentum with your retirement savings is to start saving for their college education. Yes, this means you will fund your retirement before funding your kids' college. I've talked to many parents who disagree. They can't even imagine putting money away for themselves before helping their kids with college. However, the reality is that retirement is going to happen whether you like it or not, and your kids may not go to college. Your kids will have many opportunities to help pay for college themselves, but no one is going to sweep in and cover your retirement. That's up to you. So how do you make the most of the time you have before the kids head to college? First, take advantage of tax-favored savings options. One type is the ESA, Educational Savings Account, which grows tax-free as long as you use the money for school. If you don't meet the income requirements for an ESA, check out the 529 plans available. Those are similar to the ESA, but they come with some different options. Some good, some bad. For example, you should only consider 529 plans that leave you in control of the investment and don't automatically adjust based on the age of your child. Just like retirement planning, I recommend you get personal, professional help from a financial professional you trust when it comes to college planning. You want to take advantage of all the time you have before your kids head off to school, so start early. That said, don't beat yourself up if you honestly can't afford to put anything away for college after investing 15% of your income for your own retirement. Helping cover their tuition isn't something they're entitled to. It's a blessing. If you can help your kids, great. If you can't, that's okay. It doesn't make you a bad parent. Don't forget that your child will have plenty of opportunities to pay their tuition, including working and applying for scholarships. Some parents act like expecting a child to work while in college is the worst thing in the world, but it's not. Having a job teaches responsibility, time management, and the pride that comes from accomplishing something huge. In addition, an unbelievable amount of money is available to students in the form of scholarships. All it takes is filling out an application and sometimes writing a short essay. Of all the college payment options available to your children, student loans should not be one of them. We're in the middle of a student loan crisis that's crippling an entire generation of recent graduates. These young adults are leaving college with an average of $35,000 in student loans before they even get their first job. My advice is simple. Your kids need to go to a school they can afford. Don't worry about what school your friends are sending their kids to. Other families shouldn't play a part in this decision. You need to do what's best for your family, not theirs. College planning is so important that I dedicated a whole chapter to this one subject in my book, Smart Money, Smart Kids. If you've got kids at home, it's worth to dig a little deeper into the ins and outs of paying for college. Saving for a wedding. When we think of milestones in life that could potentially cost a lot of money, weddings are often at the top of that list. Maybe you're single and you plan on getting married someday. Or maybe you're a parent and you're already thinking ahead to your child's wedding. If you have a daughter or more than one, traditionally, you will help pay for the wedding. You're not a bad parent if you can't help with this. But if you're able to, that's great. If you have a son, traditionally, the rehearsal dinner is on you. But again, only if you can afford it. When it comes to weddings, it's easy to go crazy, but that doesn't mean you should. This is an industry that will try to convince you to spend as much money as you could possibly imagine. The average wedding in the United States costs a whopping $28,000, and that doesn't include the engagement ring, rehearsal dinner, or honeymoon. At the end of the day, your child will be married, whether that is in a nearby municipal park or in a Park Avenue hotel in the middle of Manhattan. Remember, keep the comparisons out and keep the wedding, rehearsal dinner, and honeymoon in perspective. And be sure to prioritize how you save for the big day in light of some of the more pressing areas we've been talking about. Saving for a growing family. Many young couples say things like, "Sure, we want kids, but we just can't afford to be parents right now." Kids can be expensive. However, if you can enter parenthood with money in the bank and no debt, it'll definitely be easier to handle any little surprises that may pop up with your bundle of joy. Be careful here, however. Money should not be the deciding factor in whether or not you're ready to have children. If you wait until you have enough money to have kids, you may never have them. If you and your spouse are ready emotionally, then don't let money or even debt get in your way. Of course, you don't want to go deeper in debt, so you'll need to budget everything carefully. If you're currently working on your debt snowball, you should stop making extra payments on your debt while you're expecting, so you can save up a pile of money. Then once the baby is home safe and you're clear of any birth-related surprises, you can throw that extra money at your debt and get back to your debt snowball. Deciding to have a child can't be an excuse to go nuts and throw your financial plan out the window. Instead, bringing kids into the picture just makes budgeting, saving, and planning even more important. After all, the stakes are a lot higher when you're responsible for someone else. Saving for celebration trips. The only thing better than a great vacation is a vacation celebrating something. Trips are so much more special when the purpose is to celebrate a birthday, holiday, or best of all, a wedding anniversary. If you value travel in your life, celebration trips can be some of the best money you'll ever spend. When our 5-year anniversary came around, I was 5 months pregnant. We knew this would be our last big carefree getaway for a while, and we wanted to make it special. Since our wedding anniversary couldn't exactly sneak up on us, we planned how much money we'd need for a trip. Our anniversary is in December, and we started saving in June. We planned every detail as we saved for those 6 months, and the trip was amazing. As great as the trip was, though, I think the best part was that we were able to bring home only memories and pictures and no credit card debt. You'll enjoy those getaways so much more when they don't come back and haunt your mailbox a month later. Starting the saving habit. Developing a saving habit doesn't just happen on its own. Many people never get started because they're so focused on their present needs, and planning far into the future seems too daunting. But the actual discipline of saving is more important than how much you save in the beginning. You can start saving something today, even if it's only the change in your pocket. If you're living paycheck to paycheck right now, then it's important to prioritize your savings. Otherwise, you'll burn out trying to save for everything we talked about in this chapter. Begin with your starter emergency fund and build from there. If you're out of debt and living on a budget, then you should be able to focus on big savings goals like your emergency fund, retirement, a special celebration vacation, or anything else that you want to do down the road. The goal here is to do and have the things you value in life. Some of those things come with bigger price tags, so you just want to be a little more intentional and patient when saving for them. Chapter 11, the biggest savings goal of your life. My dad loves real estate. When I was growing up, our whole family would pile in the car after church on Sundays and go for a drive, which meant we were going to drive slowly through neighborhoods and look at houses. The most exciting part was if there was a house being built, we would all get out of the car to walk through it, if it was safe to do so. Houses became events and experiences for me. They were something to look at on beautiful Sunday afternoons. But now, as an adult, I understand how much responsibility comes with owning a home. Whatever season of life you're in, buying and owning a home can be a game changer. Maybe you just got married and want to move into the home you've always dreamed of living in as newlyweds. Maybe your kids are about to start school and you're looking for a home in the best school system. Maybe you're single and ready to move into something more permanent. One thing that puts many home buyers into bad situations is rushing into a purchase without taking the time to get all the facts. There are so many places in this process where our emotions can take over. We either downplay or outright ignore that little voice in our heads that knows better. Or worse, we think we can outsmart the system. The numbers might seem high for our personal budget, but we think we can find a way to make it work. We make a huge purchase in spite of the risk because we've convinced ourselves that it's the perfect house. Then trouble starts to creep in. The newlywed phase passes, and the roof starts to leak, the furnace breaks, and the dishwasher needs replacing. The monthly mortgage payment is now catching up to us. The whole thing suddenly seems to be a big mistake, all because we wanted a particular house and wouldn't consider any other options. When you are in a place you don't want to be, any amount of time feels like eternity. That is the place many people find themselves after making a bad housing decision. Let's not allow that to happen. There are some steps to take in home buying that will guarantee a wise purchase and ensure the purchase of your home will be a blessing, not a curse. These steps will make you slow down, look for the best deal, and perhaps save a little longer. In the end, you will be in a great place financially, and you'll be ready to buy the right home at the right time. You might be wondering why we're talking about buying a house in a chapter about saving. Shouldn't this fall under spending instead? Well, yes and no. Sure, a house is something you purchase, so it's definitely something you spend money on. But before you sit down at the closing table, you need to save for a long time. Saving up for a house, even if it's a down payment, can be the biggest savings goal you ever face. And once you're a homeowner, your house will probably be the biggest long-term investment you have. Every dollar you spend on a mortgage or a down payment is like putting money in a house-sized piggy bank. So it makes sense to look at home buying through the lens of saving. A blessing or a curse? Buying and moving into a home can be such an exciting time in life. It represents a shift in our goals and the commitment it takes to reach them. Like I said before, a house is the biggest investment most people ever make. And with it comes a lot of excitement, anxiety, responsibility, and opportunity. If you do it right, it can be one of the biggest blessings of your life. If you do it wrong, it can become a weight around your neck, dragging you down for decades. Buying a lie. Sadly, I've heard as many horror stories as success stories from people when they talk about their home decisions. There's so much emotion and pressure tied into most of these buying decisions that it's easy to make a mistake or an impulse decision that you come to regret. You can get so focused on the look of a certain home that you overlook problems with the foundation or plumbing. A friend moves into a high-end neighborhood that's outside your price range, but you feel pressured to move there yourself. You fall in love with a house and scramble for ways to justify paying more than you should. You're determined to put your kids in a particular school system because you want them to have the best, even if it makes zero financial sense for your family. You get house fever just because you saw a friend's new house on Facebook. Any of that sound familiar? Then, once you're in too deep to see clearly, with visions of the perfect home clouding your judgment, you rush into a bad 30-year mortgage that costs you tens of thousands of dollars in interest payments, 15 years of extra unnecessary debt, and 3 decades of monthly stress and anxiety. The payments you thought you could afford end up overshadowing the excitement you felt on moving day. All of these issues and more hit unsuspecting home buyers in the face every day. I want you to be prepared to buy your next home the right way. We're going to talk about how much of a down payment you should put down, what kind of mortgage to take out, and the pitfalls to avoid. If you take the time to learn all of this now, you'll become a prepared home buyer. The best way to buy. When it comes to buying a home, money shouldn't be the only factor to consider, but it should be high on the list. That doesn't mean you should buy an unsuitable home because it's cheap. I know people who have made this mistake, thinking they were being financially responsible, but the move ended up costing them a fortune in repairs and lost resale value. Knowing how much you can afford is essential, but it's only part of the equation. You also need to factor in how much space you'll need, what kind of commute works best for you, and how close you want to be to friends and family. When it comes to purchasing a home, the absolute best option is the 100% down plan. Not 100% financing, 100% down. That's right. Paying cash is the best way to buy a home. Now, before you think I've completely lost my mind, consider this. What if you never had a house payment? What if mortgage debt was not a part of your present or your future? What if buying a home never included a trip to a mortgage broker? It may sound crazy to you, but this is a legitimate option. Almost 25% of all homes purchased in the last 15 years were bought with cash. I've heard some pretty amazing stories from people about paying cash for homes. One couple lived above an elderly woman's garage for free because the husband did her yard work. They lived there for 5 years, banked his $50,000 salary, and lived off of her teacher's salary. After 4 years, at age 27, they paid cash for a $150,000 home and had thousands of dollars in savings to furnish it. While that's an incredible story, it's not as uncommon as you might think. Another couple lived inexpensively for 5 years, while all of their friends were running out and buying houses. They recently wrote a check to fully purchase their townhome. Another couple inherited some money from a grandfather. Instead of using that money as a down payment, they chose to put that inheritance with their savings to pay cash for a smaller home, free and clear. This is a real option, but it means you might not buy the same kind of home in the same kind of neighborhood as your friends. If you value a nicer home in a nicer neighborhood, then let's talk about how you can buy it responsibly. If you value the freedom and peace that comes with never owing a bank a dime for your home, then make a plan to get it done. Dream and think big for yourself, your family, and your future. Don't worry about what your friends have or how big their houses are. You aren't living their lives. You're living your own life. So make it a life you love. The mortgage landscape. If you do take out a mortgage, do it the right way. There are a million mortgage options out there, and unfortunately, most of them are pretty bad options. Take some time to learn the basics when it comes to mortgages. Don't simply trust what a banker is trying to sell you. Understand your options and pick the one that's right for you, not for the bank or broker. I have a friend who made pretty much every mistake possible when buying his first home. He didn't know what he was doing, and he didn't get any advice from someone who knew the real estate world. The house and the neighborhood they chose were responsible for their income, but reason went out the window when it came to the mortgage. This otherwise intelligent guy blindly followed the lender's advice and ended up with an 80-20 interest-only loan with nothing down and variable interest rates on both loans. He paid his monthly payment for years, never knowing what the interest rate would be and never earning a dime in equity. This was a nightmare scenario, and it's only by the grace of God that he got out of that house before it wrecked his entire financial future. My friend isn't dumb. He was just uninformed. He honestly didn't know any better. I never want you to go into something as monumental as getting a mortgage without knowing what you're doing. So let's cover the basics. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is not bliss when it comes to mortgages. A bad decision could cost you tens of thousands of dollars or more. So educate yourself. Learn the language and the best practices of home buying. It doesn't have to be intimidating. It's not that much different than getting into a new hobby. When you were learning about sports for the first time, you heard terms like offense, defense, play clock, and out of bounds.